case this morning is Griffin and Yarden versus Sisters of St. Francis.
Good morning. My name is Julia Yarden, and my associate Charles Griffin and I are pro se, and I thank you for the opportunity to appear in front of you today. I'm going to keep this really short. I have some big concerns about the lower court's decision with regard to our case, which I know you know is a pregnancy discrimination action. We've got some special concerns because this case does involve a religious employer, and we believe that the lower court erred also procedurally in misapplying prong four of the McDonnell-Douglas test. And I'm going to be real straight. With all respect, the lower court has a dismal record to stopping from bringing to trial some pretty worthy cases that have real serious evidence just because they seem to inconsistently or arbitrarily apply similarly situated with respect to prong four. And so that is one very specific issue that we would like to address. And I would also like to point out that we have so much prima facie evidence that it would seem to me something's going really wrong down there in the lower court if they're willing to throw our case out simply because we may or may not have fulfilled prong four of the McDonnell-Douglas test when we have successfully completed the other three portions of it. It would seem something's going wrong if that's the only way we're going to either get in front of a trier or be denied getting in front of a trier. I'd also like to point out that I believe the lower court had showed a bias towards the religious employer around considering the plausibility of that a religious employer could engage in illegal conduct. And I know it's really, really hard for the average person, especially in the district we're in, to want to believe that a religious employer could engage in illegal conduct. But I would like to point out, in our case, they did. And I have very big concerns. We've also been told about that we failed to adduce pretext because we know in the religious employer cases when you've got a pregnancy discrimination that the pretext for those cases have been shown to be moral conduct attempts. Defense would be moral conduct attempts in that they have been shown to be the number one choice for pretext when a religious employer has attempted to cover up a pregnancy discrimination situation. So those are some of my concerns, and I would like to point out that I have looked across the other districts, and it seems that they are not so arbitrary in applying similarly situated around prong four. And you even had a case, if you would permit me a moment to get this in front of me, here in this court of Bella v. Quanex, where you held that in this discrimination case, in my single discharge case, even though there was a final possible, it was thin, allegment of reduction in force as my pretext discharge, which we did rebut completely. I would like to also point out that in your situation, the plaintiff did satisfy prong four, as I also did, by showing that the job responsibilities she held were absorbed simply by other employees not in her protected class, and this burden I did fulfill, and you will see it is record that this was done by record evidence and by the proceeding and pleadings that we have submitted. My concern today is that we haven't gotten a fair shake in the lower court, and for some probably pretty questionable reasons. I would also like to point out, in order for the defense to have successfully brought a moral conduct defense at this point, which they have seeming to have done in a very thin manner, they have failed to produce a BFOQ, and my associate and I had not accepted any employment contract with these people that stated that our employment was contingent upon our sexual conduct in any manner. The issue in front of you today, I'm afraid, is to look and read carefully and see whether the religious employer has an adequate moral conduct reason for a discharge due to mine and mine associates' sexual conduct, or whether the fact of the matter, which I believe it is that these issues never arose until pregnancy became the topic of the dialogue. We were surrounded by other people who were also unmarried and engaging in similar conduct. No issue or complaint was ever raised with any of them. We were the only people approached, and it was only due to pregnancy. I'd like to reserve the remainder of my time for rebuttal, if you would permit it, sirs.
Thank you. Mr. Griffin?
Good morning. If it pleases the court, I'd like to address issues around pretext. I believe that the lower court misapplied the summary judgment standard by disregarding our evidence that we provided in determining genuine issues of material fact. Ms. Yarden has already pointed out that in terms of her pretext termination, that I'd like to add that the marketing efforts that she was involved in were not discontinued, that the CSA sales and the farmers market sales, which she was engaged in, fully continued, not only through the year 2000, but also into 2001 and 2002. In relationship to my pretext, which defense has used many pages to try and describe, there's several things that I'd like to point out that demonstrate that their approach is pretext. The first is they failed to maintain reasons for my termination. The first one had to do with a harassment policy violation. And then in the grievance procedure, when I challenged this with my supervisor, she then withdrew that allegation, and she also fled the scene, fled her workplace. And then the grievance procedure was then taken over by her supervisor, Sister Stoffregen. And in the second meeting of the grievance proceedings, entirely new reasons for my termination were proffered, which they also were rebutted in the labor court hearing for my benefits, my unemployment benefits. Third, that's the second reason for our belief that the reasons for our termination, our pretext, is that we believe that there's constructive knowledge of the upper management of the SOSF. Ms. Julia Yarden informed Stoffregen directly that she found that my supervisor, Braylage, was engaged in illegal discrimination. And before the second meeting in the grievance procedure, I went to the personnel director to review my file, my personnel file, and she told me that Stoffregen had that file. It was a file behind the file, that file contained deleterious information, that it should be destroyed, and that all of this should be kept quiet. Then in the subsequent meeting, I just described new reasons for my termination were proffered. They were such things as overplanting of crops, mismanagement of funds, and insubordination to supervisor. Defense hasn't offered any evidence that those reasons had any basis in fact. In that same meeting, they also said that perhaps the reason for our termination was violations of policy, SOSF policy number 7 and number 14. What that meant was never clearly articulated. However, they did say that my relationship with Ms. Yarden was a poor example for interns, and that how long did we expect to go on in an unattached relationship? And I believe that is the basis for the moral conduct defense that the defense is proffering. And I'd like to point out that sexual relations, non-marital sexual relationships, were going on the farm before we were employed, during our employment, and subsequently after our employment. So it was not sexual conduct that caused our termination, but that it was actual pregnancy.
Thank you, Mr. Griffin. Mr. Murray?
Good morning. May it please the court. The district court correctly found that there was no evidence to support plaintiff's allegations that their terminations were the result of pregnancy discrimination. Mr. Griffin's own deposition testimony established that he had a history of relational difficulties with other personnel on Michaela Farm. In particular, there were 5 interns who had complained to Sister Braylage about working with Mr. Griffin or had complained at meetings of farm personnel at which Sister Braylage was present. Those included Patty Gillis, who in 1999 complained that Mr. Griffin had touched her inappropriately. She had a meeting with Sister Braylage to discuss these allegations. Sister Braylage subsequently met with Mr. Griffin to discuss them and asked Mr. Griffin to obtain a psychological evaluation to investigate any potential sexual harassment issues. Mr. Griffin's own deposition testimony also establishes that another intern, Karen Clark, also complained that he had touched her inappropriately. There were meetings between Sister Braylage, Mr. Griffin, and Ms. Clark regarding that. During that meeting, she stated that she wanted Mr. Griffin never to touch her again. Both Ms. Gillis and Ms. Clark left the farm subsequently and told Sister Braylage that one of the reasons is that they no longer wanted to continue working with Mr. Griffin at the farm. The following year, another intern, Carrie Brock, called a meeting of the entire farm personnel and announced that if Mr. Griffin didn't leave the farm, then she would. He didn't, and then she did.
Mr. Murray, let me just ask you a question. Since obviously, we've read your brief and we know this part of the story, but the fact seems to be that Mr. Griffin was not terminated during the period of time you're describing. He's terminated only later after the pregnancy issues come up. Couldn't a trier of fact see that as some evidence that these other problems weren't worthy of termination, and yet it was really, in fact, the pregnancy?
Following the meeting at which Ms. Brock announced that she was going to leave the farm.
Right, her ultimatum meeting.
Her ultimatum.
Right.
About a month later, there was a meeting, this was in June, during which Sister Braylage, Sister Whalen.
Is this an answer to my question? Because what I'm trying to see is, there's this long course of events that you're painting, and yet he doesn't get terminated until well before the, at the end of this. And maybe you're getting around to the point that any pregnancies weren't known about, but there's the evidence of the rumors of the pregnancies.
Certainly.
Earlier. I just want to know why then? Because if a particular course of conduct is going on, and nothing happens, and then some other event happens, you might think it's the new event.
I think between this course of events and August 15th, in particular, there was the decision to discontinue the internship program based on these various complaints and concerns. That happened in June or July. And then on August 15th, there was no meeting scheduled with Mr. Griffin, and I believe that the conversation during that meeting turned to Sister Braylage's concerns about the internship program.
And what I'm trying to say, obviously very unsuccessfully, is that what you're describing is what I can easily imagine your take on the facts to a trier of fact. I'm trying to figure out if there's another side, not your side, and I don't mean
Certainly.
To ask you to argue for Mr. Griffin and Ms. Yarden, but could a trier of fact rationally see from the course of events and the timing a different way of looking at these facts? Do we have a genuine issue of fact? I don't doubt whatsoever, what you would be saying in such a proceeding.
I understand. I believe, Your Honor, when you consider the context of several other facts, they show that there is no connection. First of all, the only comment about pregnancy that had ever been made was in 1999 in the context of a concern about this rumor, as you mentioned, about an out-of-wedlock pregnancy. Yet in June, in early June, plaintiffs announced that they were intending to become married. That obviously would have alleviated any of those concerns that Sister Braylage had expressed a year before about an unwed pregnancy. Between that time and August, when their terminations occurred, there's no evidence that they had ever announced that they had called those plans off, that they were no longer going to be married. I believe that is probably the primary fact that would establish that those concerns that had been expressed a year before were simply no longer, would no longer have been in play.
Okay.
Also, I wanted to address a point that the plaintiffs had made about this the religious exemption. The district court did not rely on that in its decision, and the defendant did not rely on that in below, nor has it relied on it at this point. In addition, the district court also found that there was no evidence, not only on prong four of the prima facie case, but there was also no evidence that the defendant's explanations for the terminations were pretextual. And unless the court has any further questions.
Thank you, counsel. Time had expired. Okay, you have 1 minute.
In rebuttal to Mr. Murray's initial statements with regards to Mr. Griffin's record, there was no long history of relational difficulties, and this was created by defense in an after-acquired evidence attempt years after the plaintiffs were fired, because we did bring prima facie evidence and plenty of it, including that there, I was personally witness and recipient to Breledge telling me that an out-of-wedlock pregnancy would cost Mr. Griffin his employment. And she did not tell me that this was policy. She did not say I should go to personnel and look at where this is written or that we should discuss it. She presented it in a hurry, upset, after she had been told by another sister that there was a rumor of my pregnancy. I would also like to point out there was plenty of prima facie evidence that would indicate there was hostile animus towards mine and Mr. Griffin's producing a pregnancy, because by the following year, when I actually did become pregnant again, Ms. Breledge was informed directly by one of her associates that I deserved congratulations on my pregnancy. Congratulations are in art because Julia Yarden is pregnant, and this was told to her in spring, in the first week of June, in the middle of my hiring process to become an employee. And immediately upon this happening, things began changing around my conditions of being hired. I was put on 90-day probationary status. I was told I could only work 16 hours a week, and how am I supposed to complete my job in an agricultural production unit without time to even do it? I was told that Anita Breledge was going to refuse to supervise me and would not speak to me nor work with me directly while I was at task, that it was going to be left to me to make it on my own there without any direct help, assistance, or involvement from her, which would have been very necessary to me as she was my operations manager and I was supposed to develop long-range marketing for the farm. I would also like to point out that it is shocking to me that the defense would continue to attempt to bring way after acquired evidence as some reason, and that I believe this in of itself indicates pretext. And if I am able and can, and I feel I've successfully adduced pretext by simply exposing the reasons that the defense and the employer have provided as not possible, either falsehood or so undercut by the facts that are of record that it leaves the defense's position without merit.
Thank you. I'll give you 1 minute.
Thank you, Your Honor. I have to rebut the allegation by defense that Goodless and Clark, that was reason for my termination. It was those incidents specifically that were released from reasons for my termination by Staff Reagan in a letter. That was not the reason. And furthermore, he brings the idea of relational difficulties. The relational difficulties that were brought by interns, none of those reasons were brought at the time of termination and were only brought after trying to determine why I was fired in deposition, asked those kinds of questions. And that is when Breledge made those kinds of allegations. And that is the basis of relational difficulties. Relational difficulties was not ever an issue at the time of fire. Relational difficulties related to the harassment violation that was seen not to be reason for termination in a letter by Staff Reagan. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Griffiths. The case will be taken under advisement.